the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast.
Hey guys, this is Bobby Golden. We're back again for the second installment of the Entomology Podcast. Like last podcast, we have with us all three entomologists in the room, Dr. Don Cook, Dr. Angus Catchott, Dr. Jeff Gore. And last time we were here, we spoke a little bit about resistance as it related to plant bugs. I think the topic for today is going to be around boll worm management and some of the resistance that we might be seeing out in the world with some of the BT toxins.
Yeah, Bobby. So right now, I mean, we're in prime time. This podcast is going to be real timely as far as how the boll worm flight goes. Typically, somewhere around July 4th to July 15th, they start coming out of corn, and that's when we start having problems, actually both in cotton and soybeans, and that's where we're at right now.
All right, so just back up a hair. When we talk about the worms coming out of the corn, why do the worms come out of the corn? Is it because the corn's drying down, the corn's getting ready, there's nothing for them to feed on? Why do we see that, what I think y'all entomologists like to call is a flight of worms out of corn this time of year?
Well, what we'll have is you'll have a generation developing corn, and then they'll pupate, and then you have adults emerge. By then, the corn is not attractive for the adults to lay eggs, so they move to other crops.
Okay. And the important thing about that sequence, too, is right now everything's coming out of corn. So essentially, during the month of June, every boll worm in the country funnels through corn. And what we're starting to see now is we're seeing much higher survival of boll worms in BT corn. And so essentially what's happening is that they're being pre-selected in corn before they move into cotton to the BT proteins.
Okay, so let me get this straight. Corn is our host crop that's acting as a bridge to hold these insects until they can move to cotton. And because we've using BT proteins in corn and in cotton, we're losing efficacy by the time they get to cotton because there's a second generation of the worm.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what it is, and this has been a...
Damn, I'm not even an entomologist. Look at me.
Yeah, I mean, that's really good. I know I was surprised by that, actually, Bobby. No, seriously, though, that's exactly the problem, and we didn't see this 10 years ago, and now probably the last 4 to 5 years, we're seeing more and more come through corn, and since we have so much BT corn, it just makes the flight that much bigger and heavier when they do come out.
Okay,
well,
so...
To build on that, too, is... You use the word hold the population, and really it's a little more than that. Is that population, because corn is such a good host, that it increases that boll worm population before they move into cotton.
They like to eat corn is what you're telling me.
Yeah.
They love corn, hence the other name, corn earworm.
I got you. So when we're talking about these worms and we're talking about BT toxins, is there different BT toxins in corn that's not available in cotton? I know we're on multiple generations of boll guard. Talk about that a little bit, guys.
Essentially, you have the same toxins in both crops. You know, they may be deployed in different combinations, but essentially you have the same ones in corn that are in the cotton.
That's exactly right. And one of the things that we're starting to see now, though, that hasn't really been around for a while is a new toxin out there, and it's called essentially the VIP protein. It's a form of BT that happens to still be working, but we're very, very concerned because it is also in corn and in cotton, and it's the only one right now that's really holding pretty well. So are we going to see this same thing in a few years? We tend to think we are.
Okay, so we're in the first generation of VIP, but we're in the third generation of boll guard? Where are we at with that? Well, hold on. Let's just back up a minute before we get there, and let's talk about BT, its site of action, and why this is such an important trait for us in the Mid-South.
Site of action, not to get too complex, it basically binds to areas in the insect's gut and creates pores, and you have basically stomach contents leaking out into areas where it shouldn't be, and it would be basically like someone having a ruptured appendix, and you get this infection, and the insect dies.
Okay, but you say ruptured appendix, it's not gonna be present in humans. So we don't have the site of action.
No, humans don't have the site of action. The BT proteins have to be activated. All mammals have an acidic stomach pH. Insects, the susceptible insects have an alkaline. Therefore, not only do we not have the receptors for the protein, our digestive tract won't activate it either. It's just broken down into further harmless compounds.
So what you're telling me is BT is a natural safe compound?
It is highly specific, extremely specific.
Okay, and in talking about that specificity, what beneficials and doesn't mess with beneficials, what are we just attacking is lips, right?
Well, all we're attacking, all the BT proteins in corn, cotton, they have activity only on caterpillars. And certain and there's a range of response within different species. Some are more susceptible or sensitive, and others are less sensitive just naturally.
Well, and that's also a good point. So the BTs are real important because we're not having to put AI across those acres. But the problem, like we're kind of building to, I guess you could say right now, is we're having to start overspraying a lot more of this BT cotton than we did when these BTs first come out.
So by losing some of that trait efficacy, we're having to go back and use more harsher chemicals to control those worms adequately?
Well, not necessarily harsher, but we're having to put additional inputs into the crop.
When you're already paying for a technology trait. That's
10 right. years ago, we weren't.
That's exactly right.
So kind of getting back around the last podcast that we did, we talked a lot about plant bugs and resistance to different insecticides. And right now we're continuing to still have to spray plant bugs. So I'm getting a lot of questions right now about what do I do now that we're starting to get this egg lay. So, I guess Angus can really start bringing it around to what we need to discuss today about thresholds and what products we're using and recommending in different scenarios.
All right, Angus, before you talk about that, I'm no entomologist. Define an egg lay. I mean, I hear y'all say that all the time. What the heck's an egg lay?
Well, essentially, when these moths come out, after they pupated, like Don had mentioned earlier, and they come out of the corn, they find each other, the males and females mate. They get it on, and the females start laying eggs. Well, those eggs are going to hatch, and they're going to probably get under a bloom tag or some protected place, and they get harder and harder to kill as they get in protected places. So essentially, from a foliar standpoint, you're already a little bit behind the eight ball because you got to get the material to them. And sometimes it's in chest high rank cotton and it's hard to do.
So you're targeting the eggs and not the adults with the application? Is that what I heard you say?
Well, so it's getting complicated here, but I'll try to wind this down as quick as I can. In the past, we did target larvae because you needed to give the BT a chance to work. Well, nowadays, our pyrethroids quit working on bollworms. And essentially we know the chances of that little egg hatching and that larvae making it through that BT cotton is high. And for the time being, what we're doing is just in the short term until we get more VIP cotton in the system, we're recommending an egg threshold so we can get them before they get under the bloom tag.
And the reason that's changed from a larval threshold to an egg threshold is because of what we talked about with resistance to the BT proteins. It seems like as an entomologist in the Mid-South, we talk about resistance all the time, but that's really what drives what we do.
An entomologist in the Mid-South, you got a lot of bugs to kill.
That's right. And, you know, we rely on all the different technologies, whether they be traits that are bred into the crops or modified into the crops or insecticides that we spray foliar. That's why all those tools are important. But, you know, that going back to what Angus was saying is that we now have resistance to the BT proteins. Angus mentioned the pyrethroids that we have resistance to. So managing a bollworm population in cotton now is much, much more difficult than it used to be. And we're having to rely on much more expensive insecticides.
And you think that BT resistance accumulated, I don't know if that's the right word, much faster than we thought, because now we're growing a lot more corn in the Mid-South than we did when BT first come out in Bollguard 1 cotton?
Well, there's no question that we grow more corn now than when Bollguard cotton come out. But the important thing to remember, and this is just very logical, even if you're not an entomologist or anything, Jeff mentioned this earlier, just about every bollworm in the country, you know, during the month of June is funneling through corn. So if all the corn, or a lot of the corn, has BT in it, we're putting tremendous selection pressure on the population. So I don't know why it'd be a surprise to anyone that we're having these problems now.
And a little history on that. You know, the original BT corns had a single trait, and it was moderately active against bollworm. It was mostly for southwestern corn borer and European corn borer, which we really don't see. All right, the second generations, both corn and cotton, had an additional protein. Well, in corn especially, and this is initial, the activity against bollworm or corn earworm was much higher. Therefore, the selection pressure was much higher, and which has driven us to the point we are now.
So just to clarify, what Don's talking about is he's kind of going back and forth between trait and protein. And what he's talking about, just to clarify a little bit, is the different BT genes are in the plants. That those are the traits that are expressing a BT protein.
So the evolution of BT technology is kind of what Don was taking us through.
Yes, right. And just kind of give a, because you're asking about, are we seeing resistance quicker? And I don't know if that's true, but because the two gene corns have been out, what, 10 years?
Yeah, roughly 10 years or
so. You know, and that's about what we saw with the single genes. It was about 10 years.
So I think one of the things we probably ought to really hit on, and we've alluded to it a little bit, we're kind of getting on into this thing a little bit, but one of the things we need to get some clear direction out there on what we're recommending right now, because some of this we don't even have in the control guide. It seems to be evolving, you know, every year. But, you know, some of the things that we're recommending growers do, because we are in the middle of a flight right now, and who knows how long it's going to last, but people are finding a high percentage of eggs right now in cotton.
Yeah, so and that's kind of what I was trying to get to earlier, is that, you know, now the questions that I'm getting, and I know Angus and Don, y'all are getting the same questions, is if I need to spray plant bugs and I've got a 30% egg lay, what do I do in that situation? Because, you know, with the products that we have, because of resistance in both plant bugs and bollworms, you know, we could be talking about a $30 application in terms of the best recommended products for both of those pests. So I think that's kind of what we need to get into.
So basically where we're about to take this thing is, how do I use the most economical approach to lay fire to a cotton field to get rid of all these little critters?
Yeah, I guess more or less that's what we're trying to say, but I don't know how economical it's going to be, but it's going to be the best approach that we're about to lay out. And I think right now, one of the most important things we can do, and you'd be surprised how many consultants don't really realize necessarily what variety they're in on a given farm, but the first thing you need to know is you need to know what technology you're in, whether you're in a wide strike three, a Bollguard two, a Bollguard three, a twin link plus. You got to know what you're in, because the recommendation now changes by the technology that you're in.
So yeah, that's a good point. And the key to that is, we talked about the VIP trait earlier, and that being the only BT protein that's still providing high levels of efficacy for bollworms.
And you talked about that VIP trait in corn, Jeff. Is that VIP trait in cotton as well?
It is. It's the exact same VIP protein in, well, I shouldn't say exact. It is a little bit different, but it's essentially the same protein in corn and cotton. And the key to that, what Angus was getting at about knowing what variety you're in, is the key to that is if you're in any technology that ends with a 3, so a Bolgard 3 or a Wide Strike 3, or in the case of Twin Link, it would be Twin Link Plus. Any of those that have the 3 or the Plus, those varieties are the ones that have the VIP protein in addition to the old Cry proteins that were in the original Bolgard 2s and Wide Strikes.
So now, you know, if I'm a consultant walking the field, it's not as easy as, hey, I count the bugs, let's make an application. You need to base your application to save money based on the variety and the trait in that variety of the single field you're walking. So there's no more blanket applications is what you're telling me.
Not really. I mean, you know, our typical recommendation is if you have one of the VIP cottons, which is, like Jeff said, Wide Strike 3, Bolgard 3, Twin Link Plus, work off a larval threshold. The others, Bolgard 2, Twin Link, Wide Strike, that's where we're talking about spraying based on an egg threshold.
And that egg threshold is 20% is what we're recommending in Mississippi right now. Now, most of the efforts need to be concentrated around bloom tags, but we did some work trying to correlate the eggs that are in the terminal to what might be on the bloom tags, and I'll let Jeff explain that, because eggs on bloom tags, especially if you're in heavy dew, can be extremely difficult to find, but that's where a lot of them are.
Yeah, and a big question, or not just the heavy dew, but we've been getting a lot of rain showers, these pop-up afternoon showers here lately. And when those bloom tags get just a little bit of moisture to them, it's almost impossible to even look at them to try to find an egg on them. So that's why we did those correlations. And basically what it shows is that we can use the terminal as a way to determine when to spray a field based on eggs.
All right, Jeff, back up. You said we can use the terminal to define a spray. Tell me, what do you mean when you say we can use the terminal?
We can use egg counts in the terminals of cotton plants.
Okay.
To make those sprays. And basically what our data shows in those correlations is what's in the terminal is about half of what's in that whole plant.
So there's a good correlation there.
Yeah. So if our threshold is 20% eggs, we can probably just look at the terminal for eggs and base that on about a 10% egg lay. Come to the conclusion that we would be at that 20% threshold. And the key to that is I wouldn't rely 100% just on the terminal. In other words, if you're not finding eggs, we need to do a little more looking. But the good part of that data set is that there was only about 5% of the time that we had eggs on bloom tags but didn't find any in the terminals. So 95% of the time, if there were eggs on bloom tags, we were going to be finding some in the terminals of plants as well, especially once we got to that threshold level and above. The chances of having eggs in the terminal was very high.
All right, so you just threw out threshold. What is the threshold, Angus?
Well, what we're using, like he said, on non-VIP cottons, at least from an egg standpoint, was 20%. 20% eggs on bloom tags, which equates to about 10% in the terminal. Like Don mentioned earlier, if you are in the VIP cottons, we're just using our old traditional threshold of 4% live worms. We need to give them a little bit more of a chance and let that technology work. Now, additionally, all the Mid-South entomologists have been working on a big project for years, and something that we're probably about to move to when we get more back into to more VIP acres across the state is just a 5-6% fruit damage of any kind threshold. That seemed to be probably the new way we're going to head with this, and we haven't quite published all of that data yet, but that's going to probably be one of the things we start adopting.
Okay, you said more VIP acreage in the state. Is there any guesstimate right now? I know Darren's not here with you. Is there any guesstimate about how much acreage is to each gene trait in the state in the cotton right now?
Well, right now there's some Bollgard 3 scattered around. There's just not a lot in production yet. There's probably more Wide Strike 3 than any of it out there, a little bit of Twin Link Plus, but we just hadn't had time for that big build-up year. I think next year you'll have probably a lot more varieties and a lot more to choose from, assuming these things perform well in the official variety trials.
And everything you've seen to suggest says they're performing well.
Well, they seem to be, but I want to look at more data on yield, I mean, before we get
there. Well, at least from an insect standpoint.
Oh, yeah, from an insect standpoint. Now, it is important to remember this with these VIP proteins. I mean, in my mind, the way I look at these is they perform as good as Bollgard 2 did back when it was performing the best it ever has. There will be occasions that we need to make an overspray, and we all have in certain situations. So we don't need to just walk away from it, but we're not at the point we need to be spraying eggs on it by no means. There'll be occasional sprays, I guess, is what I'm trying to say on that technology.
None of these are bulletproof. There's none that you can just plant and walk away from it.
That's right.
All right, guys. So you talked a lot about thresholds. You talked a lot about BT proteins. You talked a lot about overspraying certain BT proteins. What are we going to overspray with, Angus? Where are we at as Extension Service in making that recommendation?
Well, I'll say this. We took all the pyrethroids for every crop out of the control guide about 5 years ago for boll worms, just too erratic. We still got some people that want to try it because of the price, and most of them have not been happy with it. So right now we're really down to really, I guess you would say, three products, and two of them are very similar, Prevathon and Besiege. That's the two. They're both diamides. Of course, the Besiege has a pyrethroid mix with it. We also have one more out there, and it's basically a couple compounds mixed together, Intrepid Edge. And right now, that's where we're at. I mean, that's what we got. And that's why it's going to be so important to protect these new BTs, the VIPs, as we come along, because the product list is short.
And in that product list, you just mentioned general cost of a spray.
Well, I need to mention this too. In the past, we've run about 14 ounces of Prevathon or 7 ounces of Besiege, and that's because we'd get some help from the Bollgard 2 or whatever when it was working well. Right now, we're trying to push people up a little bit higher to either 20 ounces of Prevathon or 10 ounces of Besiege, but we're looking at over $20 an acre.
And that's in the Bollgard 2, not the VIP.
That's right. Yes. In the VIP right now, we're hoping we don't have to spray at all. I mean, that's what we're hoping. But, I mean, we will cross that bridge when we get there.
Gotcha. So, Don, what does this mean for soybean? Is it very similar? Or?
No, the situation for beans is a lot simpler. Most of the beans, really early planted beans, are probably past the stage where they're going to be attractive for boll worms. If the beans are not flowering, it's hard to get a boll worm to go in there. So it's the ones that are flowering. We've got thresholds that we redid about 5 years ago, and the product list is basically the same as it is in cotton. You have Intrepid Edge, Besiege, and Prevathon.
So few options to kill worms. I'm assuming that's what we're talking about,
yes,
right? I kind of spaced out there for a minute.
Few
options for worms. Let's hold on to our BT technology as long as we can, and Jeff's going to take us home.
Yeah, I mean, I think we touched on a lot here today. And the key, just like we ended the last time, all of these technologies, whether it's Bollgard 2, Bollgard 3, if it's got the VIP protein, no VIP protein, you know, the key is going to be scouting and intensely scouting this crop and making sure that consultants and growers have a good idea of exactly what's out there in the field, and then catering the different insecticide mixes and rates and all those different things based on what's going on in the field at the time.
All right, Angus, right before we get off here, because we're running pretty long-winded, availability of these insecticides. I know in the rice world we've got a shortage of clincher right now because we've had big grasses. Are we going to get into a shortage of these insecticides?
Well, I've been hearing about shortages of insecticides this year, but fortunately those three are not ones that I've heard about. Who knows what's going to happen? We get a big looper flight or something crazy, you don't know. But right now I don't think that's an issue.
All right, guys. Well, we appreciate y'all tuning in for the second Entomology podcast. And like always, if there's anything we can do, just don't hesitate to give us a call and we'll come see you as quick as we can.
The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast is produced by the Mississippi State University Extension Service.